Hello, everyone. We've added this note to the beginning of all of our original episodes of the podcast to let you know of a few changes that have happened around here and hopefully avoid any confusion for you as listeners. When we began this podcast, it was called Starseed Survival Guide, and most people called me, your host, by my birth name, Erin. Throughout the first 22 episodes, you'll hear me introduce myself as Erin, hear others refer to me as Erin, and hear many references to the name of the show being Starseed Survival Guide. In 2018, more and more folks began calling us Yaya, and in March of 2020, we changed the name of this podcast to Earthside Survival Guide to more accurately reflect our intentions for the show. For a little more of the full story of what these changes mean to us, please check out episode 23, a temple talk where we reflect on where we've been, where we are now, and where we're going. We thank you for your patience during this transition, for listening and sharing this journey with us, and most importantly, for allowing us to continue to grow and evolve. Blessings.
And as I call in the east, I walk into the stream, and as I call in the south, I bring water to my mouth, and as I call in the west, the creek swallows my chest, and as I call in the north, I am swallowed by her soul.
It's me, Yaya, and I'm here today with intuitive tarot teacher, writer, and host of the podcast Tarot for the Wild Soul, Lindsay Mack. Welcome, Lindsay. It's wonderful to have this opportunity to speak with you today.
Oh, so wonderful to be here. Thank you for having me, Yaya.
So we're going to try out moving seamlessly between the macro and the micro, because that is the movement of our curiosity. And hopefully that will work for you and you'll hear the questions from whatever level they make sense at for you in this moment. So our first question was, I would love to hear from you, who are your people and what do your people need?
I do feel this on a microcosmic and macrocosmic level. I'm going to answer, who are my people? I am very blessed to have a circle of people that I've most recently connected with that have truly begun to rewire my nervous system around what it means to trust friends and what it means to have actual soul family. So I do really want to honor that there's a change in brain with this question that I'm seeing that feels like a gift, which is like the minute I heard, who are your people? I was like, those people, you know? And I think before I would have thought, well, who do you serve? Which is why I really like that question a lot. And I'm going to continue the answer, which is that that group of people, that really beautiful group, what they need is something that is very new for me, which is like they need and desire my actual real self to be present with them. And it's a lot to give. And like they're making me realize how long I've run away from that, you know? So been a real healing. So I feel like, you know, they just need for me to show up. But on a more macrocosmic way, I don't know. I think in general, my people are those who have experienced some measure of suffering and desire to live. I think my people in that more macrocosmic way are folks who have experienced suffering and desire to love life no matter what. And I think what they need is just to be reminded that that's possible. And when it's not possible, that it's okay. You know, it's a good question.
Thank you. In your answer, I hear that this is might be an appropriate moment just to congratulate and celebrate this major shift in your world and whatever knowledge, whatever work that you've been doing on the inner planes that made it possible for you to attract people that are more of the frequency that you would like to be moving forward as.
Thank you. My heart is open to receive those words because it honestly felt like life and death work.
Mm.
It was very hard to let them in and let them stay. And it's been powerful. It's been really powerful. And hearing your words really makes my whole kind of being sing to be recognized as that being work. So thank you for that. Thanks for seeing.
You're welcome.
Yeah.
And in the second part of what you said about a sense of identity or solidarity with people who've experienced a lot of suffering and desire to love life no matter what, that is a really interesting picture you paint too. It reminds me of myself maybe about 5 years ago. I started working with a healing arts practitioner, and we got into one of those spaces where they just asked the right question or where like the truth that I was not able to say just came out. And what came out was like, it was kind of in this like, do you want to know a secret? Like, oh, I've figured out what my secret is. I hate it here. I hate it here so much.
Yeah.
And they just held space for it. They didn't judge me. They didn't try to fix it. They didn't even really respond. They just let me pour out this like very impassioned moment. And then when I went home and I got to keep unpacking like what was coming up out of that opening, where it took me to was actually like, well, it was like, why? What's so bad about it? And it was like, what's so bad about it is I love it here so much and I'm not allowed to plug in with any of the things that I came here to commune with and be a part of and participate with. So it's like somebody giving me permission to say like how much I was suffering and how much I was hating life. That was what I needed for me to find what was on the other side of that, which was like, actually, like, I have an uncontainable love of life. And it feels like it's just I'm being asked to put it away. That's too much. It's not the right place for it. Like, you know, don't enjoy too much.
100%. That is really powerful. And it resonates hard with me.
So my question that next was, this happens almost every time, and I acknowledge it almost every time, is we interview intuitive people. So they tend to intuit the next question and answer it in the first one. So the next one was, who do you serve? And I hear that is who you serve. And so then to the even more personal, and you can be as abstract or terrestrial as you suits you here, but just... who are you?
Oh, I don't know. I don't know. Goodness. Many layers to who I am. Hard to say. I mean, I am a teacher. That is the first word that comes to mind in all things. I'm always learning. I feel like I'm just as much of a student as I am a teacher. I am definitely... a witch, that feels really clear. I'm a daughter. That is something that is very strong in me, even though I don't have communication or contact with my birth parents. And I feel like I'm someone who takes a great deal of joy out of being alive under almost all, with almost no evidence as to why. You know, like, I mean, my life is really sweet now, but yeah, I don't know. I'm also not the best at always describing myself. And the depth of that question and the simplicity of it is really moving to me, you know?
I'm happy to be in the mystery of what you don't have words for. I think a lot comes through in your presence. Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you.
You're welcome. So where would I like to go next? I feel a very expansive field of consciousness
from you right now. And there's like inviting me to go off script, but usually it gets weird when I do that. So
you know what's so funny about that? And I'm sorry if I'm sort of, I was so hoping, speaking of getting weird, that you would talk about how time is changing.
Well, maybe that is what is being described, what we're dancing around right now. So we'll see. Certainly there's a feeling of like all these doorways that I'm like, ooh, what's over there? But like, wait, no, we're doing it.
Totally.
So I always ask, and I from the very little that I know, you know, it might be something you do or don't want to talk about. I respect that, but I do always ask just where people are coming from in a really literal sense, because I think that it helps to provide access if there's any sense of like projecting or like, oh, like Lindsay Mack, so cool. You know, sometimes it makes it hard for people to feel like the perspective of a teacher or a practitioner could be helpful to them. So I'd like to ask if we could hear a little bit about your childhood, where and how you grew up, and what early life events set you on the path to being, you know, such a resource for those who are seeking to work with the tarot for healing and evolution.
I would be honored. I was born in New Jersey and descend from folks who came from Scotland and Ireland and all over Italy, including Lake Garda and Sicily. And that has always been a very big part of my youth in America, is a lot of touching in on those cultures and countries, which just felt like a gift. I was born into a very chaotic, very traumatic childhood. And there are many layers to that chaos and that trauma. But the main core of it is that my mother is a very ill, very disturbed person whose illness was not at the point of support where it could be. And so there was a lapse, I think, in what people realized was happening in the house that I was raised, or maybe they weren't ready to know it. But I was raised mainly by my mother. My father left when I was 4. And my brother and I lived in physical and psychological abuse every day, all the time. And that was my experience of the world from the time that I was born. So it was very, very extreme, from like beatings to like kind of torture psychologically, and just really is pretty extreme, unfortunately. And because I was also surrounded by other caretakers who I don't think could really deal with that, there was a lot of normalizing of that behavior. So I didn't know and have the resources and the self-sovereignty to say, this is PTSD, until I was in my 20s. And I just thought I was crazy. And I just didn't understand why I would all of a sudden be terrified, why I had so much fear about certain things, why certain people didn't feel safe. I feel like I'm still unraveling to this day. I'm 35 years old. Like, I'm still unraveling things about my father that I thought were true, but later found out were not. Like, they were what I was told. And when you live in something like that from the time that you're born to really 19, like I left the house when I was 18 and went to college, was privileged enough to go to college. I didn't, which my grandparents helped with, that nobody talked about that. Nobody talked about the abuse. Nobody talked about what help I might need. It was just kind of like, so I didn't, like, I just didn't know to even think about it. And it would come and it would swallow me up, and there weren't enough resources, so I just kept dissociating. And so all that kind of leads me to when I was 30, sort of all of it accumulated in what I would call a breakdown, but what was definitely the right kind of experience to get me healing and in the direction that I needed to go to start to unwrap some of this. And that's when my family was really, there was a boundary put up with them. And right after that, which was sort of, when I say unexpected, I mean, never in my wildest imagination, like in any realm of reality, did I think a couple months after that, basically, I would be starting to do this work. But that's exactly what happened. It's like, as soon as I had space and as soon as I had the self-permissioning to really heal, and I'm still doing that, an active healing, I would say, all of this wild soul healing work started to form. And to kind of go back and spiral, to go back in a spiral and come back forward in a spiral. When I was 12, like, I always knew that there was something about me. I think for many of us, like, I knew things and didn't know how I knew them. I always did. No one in my family is spiritual or a witch that they know of, even though they are. And I kind of always knew that I was and didn't really know why. I knew I was queer from the time I was like in diapers. I was just like, I like everybody. I have a crush on everyone. And it wasn't until I was like 13 that I learned that there were words for that if you wanted to take those words on. And when I was younger, that felt right. And then when I was 12, my father is like, he came back into my life when I was older, but my dad like is a really conservative Republican guy, like a New Jersey guy. And he was definitely like bewitched by the Pixies because he took me to so many bookstores and brought so much lesbian feminist witchcraft propaganda books for me. And like, just, I don't think ever paid attention or never, or maybe he gave me that gift by just purchasing me. He never questioned what I wanted to get at bookstores, which was because my mother doesn't leave the house. It was the only time that I was ever able to connect with that. And so when I was 12, I bought my first tarot deck and I had not had any exposure to tarot prior to that. I don't even think I knew what it was, but kind of like a good Virgo rising. It was like, well, I'll get this thing and I'll also get like 3 to 4 books and I'll teach myself. And I did, and read all through middle school, high school, and college, and really loved to do it. But I didn't know that it would be something that would be some of the great love work of my life. You know, I love to work with the tarot. And after I kind of drifted away from all of that in my 20s. And when I was 30 post breakdown, that's another thing that came back in, was tarot kind of coming back into my hands in the way that it had when I was younger and that I had walked away from when I was older. And how my work developed, even though you didn't ask this, but feels right to end here, really how my work with the tarot started to develop is that I didn't have enough money with all of the care that I really needed and the level of PTSD that was running through me, like active fight flight post breakdown, to have a circle that really felt supportive in terms of care and healing, because I didn't have enough money. And I didn't have the resources at that time to know where I could access it for not a lot of money. So I turned to tarot. And in those moments when I couldn't really decipher the difference between my brain chemistry and that like teeny, teeny, very small, very quiet whisper of truth underneath, somehow I knew to go to my deck and say, can you please show me which one is true? Mm-hmm. And that was the beginning. And that was, no one taught me to do that. And it is amazing because a lot of us do that. I don't think that that's so rare. I think that a lot of us who are suffering and who desire to have some awareness in those moments turn to tools for that use and for that kind of clarity. But the more I used it in that way, the more I saw what it could do. And that was sort of the root of my work. And while I healed, I got to hold space for others. So that's a little bit about my childhood and how I got here.
Thank you.
Sure.
I really liked what you said at the end about the role that tarot played in your own learning, discernment, and like learning to decipher like intuition from chemistry. That's definitely a major, if not like the main way that I work with the tarot daily. It's part of my personal self-care practice in Vedic astrology. I have something that translates loosely as stupid man karma, which means like that, you know, I had a really great astrologer who was able to like, you know, tell me the facts, like that's what it translates as, but then to say like, it just means that you're not the best at making decisions that actually lead to your happiness.
Fuck.
You know, yeah, and those moments are kind of like, wow, well, that's true. I can't deny that I feel empowered to make decisions and then deal with the consequences of them. And there's lots of consequences of being like, well, this is what I thought I wanted. So I think the tarot has become like the most empowering thing because I know that I think it's just my quadruple Aries nature that I just like have that's like a very impulsive sign. And I just have lots of hard to contain feelings. So pretty much whenever I have an urge to do something, it's like, there's like an urge and then there's like, you know, the best way to go about it. And that maybe takes a little bit of time or sleeping on it. So yeah. I've had to employ a lot of what I call timeline spreads. And I will just say, okay, like what happens if I write this in this text response, like what I actually want to write. And it's usually like the tower, the hangman, no,
please the devil. Not.
Yeah. And then I'm like, okay, let me imagine that I have an editor. And then I get into like my own self-editing, curating frame of mind and just write a slightly less enthusiastic version of that or a slightly more moderate suggestion for an approach. And it'll be like warmer. And then I do another one that's like, okay, what happens if I just write nothing at all today and then revisit and cut out 50% more of it in the morning? And then it's like green light. And I literally have to do this like sometimes every day to move forward without just like destroying my life with all my like impulsive kind of false start energy.
I deeply resonate with that. Yes.
Another piece of, that I'm hearing is it could be cool because I know there's a lot of people out there that know exactly what they need to heal and they know that they don't have access to it. And obviously they don't feel great about society that creates the circumstances that make that the case, that they can't access, they don't have the resources to access what they need in order to heal. And of course, everyone deserves to heal that has, you know, been injured. And so I would say that myself and certainly a number of other people I know are slightly cautious about the idea of community as much as it's like lots of people are just getting excited about it. Yay, I'm getting it. Community is the way. Together we're better. But I've been in that experiment for like coming up on a decade now of kind of like, let's just do everything together and let's just like support each other through it all, the ups and downs, the divorces, the abortions, like all of it. And what I'm finding is that it's pretty common that people who are most excited about community are the people who have trauma and are not resourced enough to go to have a therapist, to check themselves into an inpatient healthcare facility. Yes. It's like to have the things that would be actually appropriate and be able to heal them. And so it's like, well, the next best thing is if we just can all support each other, which sounds great on paper, but what you end up with is like a group of people who are maybe uniquely incapable of supporting each other because they all have similar traumas. They all have maybe above average level of triggers and average or less level of professional healthcare or healing arts skill sets, or have a career in the healing arts and are incapable of offering any more of that work for free in their free time.
Yes.
So like I have seen these dynamics create this like hairballs of idealism and excitement and coming together and we're going to all support each other, and then explosive kind of falling apart of little movements that are beginning to pick up momentum. And it's cool to me just to hear that something like the tarot. The deck usually costs $30. There are endless books out there. If you can't afford a book, you can go on the internet, and there are endless websites filled with really good information where you can learn the tarot. And that if everybody just had like one or two more tools for getting in there and being present with and getting some guidance out of the gnarliest of places they can get themselves into, it would just be that much less pressure on community to heal people with severe, you know, traumas and high levels of need. Like, how are we supposed to do that just in a social dynamic?
Yeah.
It's not really conducive.
No, it isn't. Yeah. And it's been amazing because, like, I don't, with all, you know, I'm sure that everyone listening to this has incredible awareness about tools that serve them. But I do think sometimes that if more people, just as you were saying, kind of knew that the tarot was available to them to be that kind of mirror, there would be a lot less leaning in ways that are not always, it's not inappropriate, but just are above what people can offer.
Yeah.
You know?
It's just not like effective a lot of the time.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter how much people love each other. That's sort of the bad part is when the takeaway is like, oh, well, like they didn't love me enough to like stick it through this hard time. It's just like, it just didn't have the tools.
Yeah. Or someone else is going through something and they don't have the space. Exactly.
Yeah. So this is just an observation of mine that may or may not be true for you, but I find that most folks who work with others one-on-one or in groups see waves or patterns of different kinds of issues.
Yes.
And so working with other people offers a unique window into what people in general are grappling with. So I think it attracts a certain kind of personality who maybe has like a voracious appetite for understanding of human nature. And so I'm wondering, I'm seeing you nodding, so, you know, wondering if that's true for you, and if so, what kinds of themes you have seen coming up in your work lately?
I am obsessed with this question because I love serving the collective and very much enjoy that intersection between one-on-one and group as a mirror to the whole. So yes, I have seen that. There are two things that I feel like I'm seeing most. I'm curious to hear what you see too. I'd love to hear your answer to this. I'm seeing two things right now in my Tarot for the Wild Soul student group. The theme that I'm seeing the most is really around, and I think we could say this pretty much for any experience, but really about acknowledging patterns of past mistrust in self. There's a lot of rewiring that I've been seeing around people not only acknowledging that they have experienced a mistrust in self around something, but starting to put the pieces together about where they started to do that. So I'm not only seeing kind of an awareness develop around where we left the garden, so to speak, around when we stopped not trusting, and how now that we're armed with information like, oh, it was at this moment or it was at this time, how people are starting to find their way back to the garden on instincts that they've not remembered that they had access to. There's just so much more loosening of the hierarchy I'm finding in my student group than I've ever experienced in any student group. Prior to this, there's been a lot of deep, and by the way, there's nothing wrong with this, but a lot of leaning and a lot of like, well, what do you think, Lindsay? And part of my, I have like a trick with my courses, which is like, it's not a trick. I'm smiling with like a wink in my eye. But the trick is, the whole point of how I teach is just to hopefully facilitate a rewilding of what was lost in some tarot interpretations. And then the rest is theirs. So it's really about them coming to what makes sense to them. And this year is the first time that I'm really seeing people go the full mile with it. And I think that I'm seeing it also in a very collective way too. There's just so many eyes opening. And then the second thing that I'm really seeing is, like, I feel like there's a lot happening that is very out there, but I feel like time is kind of speeding up and slowing down a lot right now. And I also feel like I'm feeling things under the earth, inside the earth, and there's a lot of solar stuff happening. And I feel like there's been so much environmental, energetic changes to, like, gravity, time, light, which I know is a little out there, but I think it's been really intense on the physical body.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing that I feel like I'm seeing a lot of is people who are just really on their journeys with physical pain, flare-ups, chronic illness that seems to not just be a part of re-triggering in a big collective way, because obviously there's been a lot of re-triggering over the past few years, but that I feel like there's some, like, real time collapse happening right now that I think the body is trying to keep up with.
Mm.
And those are my two observations.
Wonderful. I love it. I'm always especially interested in comparing notes with other, I don't know what the word would be. I do think of it like nodes, the way that there's, like, the hyphae, or like the visible mushroom above ground, and then the mycelium that connects them all. And that you know, you have your node and we have our node, and there are just, like, you know, thousands and millions maybe. Yeah. But, like, I guess maybe everybody is a node, but, like, whether or not that node is, like, active in this particular time frame, more the question. I think that with your two observations, the patterns we have been seeing in one-on-one work are people who I just maybe know in a particular capacity. Like, if I know somebody who they are in a group and they have, like, a personality that are, like, really energetic and really fun or fiery, or they get angry, or, you know, they're like a wild dancer or something that's kind of big. And this coming home to the part of our consciousness that feels everything, that's, like, tracking the minutiae and finding, like, some tiny, tiny, tiny little thing, like a little grain of sand that's just not supposed to be in there. And so a way of, like, celebrating the part of ourself who is perhaps, we have words like micromanaging, you know, to dismiss somebody who's tracking all the details, because often that just feels overwhelming to others. And so I think that the part of us that is tracking all the details knows that other people feel overwhelmed by it and has sort of shamed itself into silence. And then it's coming out in these safe, private, one-on-one containers that's like, no, this part of me has a key to my healing. This part of me knows something about what needs to be course corrected. So being with this always feels like a very young kind of, like people split off from that part of themselves at a very young age, because maybe it was like, all the feedback, all the crying, you're like annoying mom, like, stop giving so much feedback. So it feels like almost like a baby, like a very, like, wise baby that's like, I just need to be a baby for a minute so that I can tell you all the things that your baby self knows that you're, you know, adult, fierce, wise woman is like, doesn't have the time for.
I love that.
Yeah. And then what you said about the planetary stuff makes sense, because my own body's very sensitive and I have not been able to move very much. Like, thank God for the computer and, like, you know, being able to make big impacts with small physical actions, like pressing a button. And I have had to just surrender into it, because I'm like, I'm doing everything right. I'm doing all my self-care. I am, like, resourced. I have food. I'm exercising. Nobody's really harassing me, like, emotionally, like, draining me. So why can't I move? And it makes sense that sometimes the only way to make it through, like, big planetary shifts is just to go completely limp.
Yeah, I think so.
And surrender into like the ocean, you know, just don't resist it. Just roll, let it roll you. You'll figure out, yeah, wherever you are supposed to be when it spits you out on the surface, exactly. Like miles down the shoreline.
Yeah, and you're like pulling your bikini top like off of your head. Yeah.
Yes, this is a perfect image, I think, for me. Hopefully.
My God, I have spent so many times like being like shot like out of a cannon backward in a wave, and I'll literally go down so hard and my only thought is like, when I stand up, am I gonna flash my grandfather? And that's like the only thing, you know.
Yeah. Yes. Yes, you probably will, and you'll.
Yeah, and I have.
Everyone will be okay.
Yeah, and exactly.
So, kind of speaking about the body and how it responds mm-hmm. to these larger, like transpersonal circumstances and cosmic forces. You have spoken about healing from complex PTSD. I am curious if you're willing to share. What, if any, other modalities and tools besides the tarot have been most helpful for you to heal? And then specifically, because your traumas are like social and interpersonal and relational, what practices you employ to maintain emotional health in your personal relationships today?
I am a verbal processor. And I am also very aware, and I think that it's true, that trauma is not healed through talking. It needs to be literally cleared out through different means. But for me, the biggest work and the greatest debt, I guess, that I have in terms of my healing has been with my teacher, Michelle, who has both provided the opportunity to be in sacred channeled oneness with her. She also has an education and a background in biochemistry and pharmacology. So she has a lot of, I credit her everywhere. Like, there's so much of her work that lives in what I do with Soul Tarot, like with her blessing, basically, because it's just such a huge part of where I learned what I did. And that processing with her has been on many levels, because she's a very powerful person and a very powerful healer. So there's a lot of energetic work that gets done in those experiences. I have just recently started to go back to therapy and have started to experience EMDR, and I'm really enjoying it. It's a little too harsh for me, so I don't know how long I'll do it, but I like it. I am really now getting into a new level with all this, because the last few years have been very intense and have opened the opportunity for me to get different care because of other traumas that have happened in the last 2 years with my health and my body. And so I feel very much like I'm sort of a newborn with this answer, because prior to this, it's been extremely specific body work, because there's a lot of my body that is still not comfortable with touch, especially like on a table with a stranger. If I know someone mm-hmm. and there's a relationship, because I was hit, you know, there's just, I can't even control some of the, you know, it would take a lot of work. And I feel like I'm finally getting to the point where maybe we could go down that journey if I had the right person. But I would say my work with Michelle has been the biggest thing. And just learning, reading, it's really been like, that's been a huge part of it. Body work where it feels safe, somatic mm-hmm. work, breath work, mm-hmm. huge. Yeah. The second part of your question, I mean, I'm always completely honest, but that area of my life, interpersonal, brand new. Brand new, like to the point where when I filled out the application for my therapist, she has this like really big, beautiful intake form. And there was a part of it that was like, what area of your life would you like to see improve? And I like didn't even check friends, because I was like, well, I don't care. Like it's always been the area that I've just assumed it's a big space, not only because of interpersonal trauma, but also because my mother never had any friends, any guy friends, any girlfriends. She never had friends. my grandmother, her mother never had girlfriends. Mm-hmm. So there was something in my raising too that was kind of like, well, you don't need that. Mm-hmm. And when I would kind of get friends and when inevitable disappointments, misunderstandings, triggers would flare up, I just walked away. Mm-hmm. So I was like, well, this is a relationship I have some control over, so I'll just shut down and walk away. And I feel like my husband is my biggest teacher. I've been with him for 10 years, and staying with my husband has been the finest work of my life because mm-hmm. it's taken a lot to stay. So I feel like that's a big space of intimacy and connection, and he's helped me heal a lot of that. But I am just now, as we speak, year of our Lord 2019, like just starting to take my first full steps onto like, what is it like to have friends? Aww. Because I do now. And I'm like, well, what are my patterns? And you know, that circle, my people, we all got together in Joshua Tree and we got to practice, like really talking honestly, because we all have that trigger too. We all have that pattern in our relationships, and we were all kind of just able to be so open with one another about it. And it was kind of amazing. So I can't wait to talk about this like in 5 years when maybe I have a little bit more knowledge, because it just wasn't important to me up until very recently. It's just sort of like, well, I don't get that one in this lifetime. Little did I know, it's like the hardest work I've ever done, you know, like, so yeah.
And is it a leap to say that, like, I hear you saying it wasn't that important to you, but that maybe that was like a cover story for like, it doesn't feel safe.
Of course. Yes, yeah. Of course. It all was, you know, it all was. And this is a big season in my life for healing sexual trauma and wounding that I didn't even know I had, like literally did not even know was living in me that is now. And what an honor, because the fact that it's all coming forward, like I know I'm ready to hold it, and opening back up again to interpersonal webs.
Yay. Another moment that I'm so happy to get to just celebrate you. And,
thank you.
You know, blow the etheric confetti cannon in your name.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you.
That's profound.
Oh, thank you.
So I'm going to tell a little story to illustrate the dynamic that I'm sure you're familiar with for everyone. And then I'll ask a question somewhere in there. So I used to get readings at a metaphysical shop in my neighborhood, and I stopped when I realized that although the reader was definitely undeniably like very knowledgeable of the archetypes and like talented, that she was reading from inside of a smaller paradigm than the one that I occupied. So there, it illustrated for me that there's the matter of the information that's available, like the information that we are ready or able energetically to make available to like expose or reveal to a intuitive practitioner. And then like what of that information they're able to actually pick up on based on their development of their gifts and their abilities. And then the matter of the meaning that the reader makes out of the information that they're able to pick up from you. Mm-hmm. And that meaning that they make is obviously going to be influenced by their own beliefs and opinions and life experiences and understanding of how the universe works, or lack of understanding about how the universe works and where they're at on their own healing journey and all of these things. Like it never crossed my mind to consider that when I was younger, when paying for a reading. And so I have had many readings in my life where I can now, at this like level of my own self-awareness and self-assessment, I can see all those readings left some residue of the reader that was difficult for me to digest. And that could just be like an opinion or something, you know, that was unnecessary and wasn't what I was seeking, you know, misreading of what I was looking for from them. And so I have, and I'm not unique in this, but I've definitely like grabbed onto this term empowering readings as like my assessment. When I go for a reading, it's just like I am also reading the reader to see if they are somewhere, one that I'm going to go back to that I can trust as a resource to help me and provide, you know, something valuable for my own like self-navigation. So that's really the assessment is like, I see what information that person was seeing. I see how they put it together. Was their perspective valuable to me? Was it empowering? Like, do I feel like I can use the information and I feel good? Or do I feel bad about myself based on what I said? So anytime that I pull cards in a session, I'm always really conscious of this idea, especially if, you know, somebody's like, oh, I'm doing all this work on myself. I'm feeling really good. And then you pull like something in the future position that's like, you know, the devil, death, the tower, like, you know, the kind of easy to color with your own interpretation cards. I'm always super conscious of what is what I'm sharing with them. Like, I don't need to get anybody in fight or flight mode or to scare anyone. And so, yeah, this idea of how to share information in a way that like it's true, it's useful, and it's empowering. So it's something that attracts me to the way that I have heard you talk about the archetypes, because it feels like you're kind of a steadfast voice in that space, reminding folks that there are no negative cards in the tarot mm-hmm. and there are no like mistake cards mm-hmm. and I would love it if you would be interested in unpacking or sharing some of your wisdom around some of the more misunderstood cards in the deck, such as the Tower or the Devil.
I would love that. Nothing would make me happier. And I want to start by just really honoring and blowing ethereal confetti about, well, everything about you. But I will say about your intention and desire to not bring anyone into fight flight. Because this is something that I tell my students all the time is like people just don't think, a lot of readers don't think about how their words affect people because that's not a part of the bedrock of learning to read. That's pretty new. And when I started to teach, it was non-existent almost. And my answer to that is really simple in solidarity with you. If someone is in fight flight, they will not hear a word that you've said. So there's a really good reason to learn to speak in a way where people can hear what you're saying. So there's just a lot of brilliance to what you shared. And I want to like echo it with my little trumpet and just say like, yes to no hypervigilance in tarot readings. Yeah, I would be really happy to talk about the Tower. And you said the Devil or Death?
I said the Tower and the Devil because those are just two for me that like when I see those cards, my little hairs kind of go up and I'm like, oh, I got to pay more attention to what's happening right now because I didn't expect to see that today.
Totally. So I guess I would start by saying to anyone who wants to hear this that the first place that we need to go with the tarot, especially with those two cards, is to, yes, remember that not only are there no bad cards, but that all cards bring medicine, even if it's bitter. So it can be a really useful exercise for, again, anyone listening with any tarot card to say, if I were to encounter this in a field of wild herbs and flowers, and if there were to be medicine to this card, what use would it have? Why would I put it in a tincture? What? Because nothing's going to kill you. And even stuff like pokeberry, right? You can take like one tiny drop and it can do a lot. So sometimes a card, it's like just one drop, but it's still medicine. It still brings something. So in our exploration of the harder, spikier cards that can really bring up, because everyone has them, like I do too, it's just a continual unfolding of the realization of what that medicine is. So the Tower is the burning away, essentially, of any structures that have been created through the course of our lives that are no longer serving us. And because the reason why we don't love the way the Tower feels is because it's ruled by Mars. So the intensity of it is just harder. It doesn't come in with a lot of gentleness. It just comes in with a lot of firepower and force. And is there as one of the greatest liberators in the tarot. I think the devil is too. But the tower, when we receive it in a reading, is an opportunity to connect with the medicine of a contained forest fire, and one that we could imagine a controlled burn might be, because I know forest fires are extremely triggering to a lot of people. But the kind of forest fire that we would do to contain, aerate the soil in a way that provides care to the land and provides room for growth, that's exactly what's happening. The problem, the hard thing, the spikiness with the tower is that it's meant to kind of trigger the ego. And it very organically kind of makes the ego feel like we're not safe, because we're having a lot of eye-opening moments in a moment with the tower. So a lot can all of a sudden become clear that we didn't know before. A structure that we've been really leaning on can collapse. And I always teach, like, there are many levels of tower. Sometimes the entire tower has to come out of the ground, including the basement, which is like sub-basement tower. And it's like, we're literally rebuilding from the ground up. Sometimes it's just the little top. So it can be really slight and it can be really intense. And no matter what, it's always this beautiful signal. You're just ready to let go of something. Something's going to come through and it's going to be very powerful. You may know it subconsciously. You may know it overtly. It will probably feel intense to your nervous system, but you know what to do to take care of yourself while this fire burns. So do your best to keep kind of cool and calm and really let that go. Because something really beautiful about the tarot that I really appreciate that has taught me so much is like the star follows the tower. You know, it's like no matter what, we're going to get some built-in time to cool down. So the best thing that we can do is kind of move through the burn and let this thing come forward. And by the way, like, I want to demystify, if I can, the tower for a moment, because most people just link it with disaster. If you have always felt that you are not beautiful, and if divine puts someone in front of your face that is like true and sincere, that you are really drawn to, and is like, your beauty is blowing my mind, that's tower too. Because no longer can you say to yourself, well, nobody's ever said that to me. Now your brain is like, well, this gorgeous person thinks you're beautiful. And obviously, like, it's nice if we think we are, but there's a reason we're not alone here. It's really nice to hear it from other people's reflections are good. So that's tower too. Like, tower can be amazing. Like, when you all of a sudden know, like, oh yeah, I don't have to stay in this marriage if I don't want to. I can walk away. It's intense, but also a total liberation. And I think that the devil, I really don't like the devil. It's just so uncomfortable for me. Like, I really appreciate what it does. Like, I like its tincture, but I'm always like, like, I just don't, when I pull it, I'm always like, ugh, because it's hard, you know? It's like, when we get the devil, we've just come out of temperance. And temperance is arguably one of the highest points of expansion that we travel to in the three lines. It's like, we've cleared our medicine of line two. We've stepped out of death. We've gotten into temperance. It's this incredible initiation of something that takes place over a long period of time. We're co-creating. We've realized in temperance, like, yeah, I'm not alone in this life. I can, like, co-create. And usually when we're really high in expansion, the brain doesn't like it. It's not familiar. So it invites us into contraction. And that is essentially what the devil is. And so I like to share with people that the devil has been too long really diminished in its scope, where people usually just talk about it as shadow self or shadow behaviors or addictive behaviors. And it's actually not that. It's two things that I think are really powerful. One is reclamation of the things that can invite us into shame, things that have been relegated to the shadow self that we are invited to re-embrace and reclaim. So if we were taught that a desire of ours was not okay to have. We can pull the devil around reclaiming that and bringing a lot of empowerment to it. But no matter what, the deepest work we do in the devil is getting to decipher where the brain is inviting us into contraction. And because the brain is tricky, the devil is really, it's really tricky card, because a lot of the time I pulled the devil right after I've been in a very big, there's probably a better word for expansion, but just like up-leveling, just an openness of time. And I'll pull it and I'll start recognizing it's so subtle. And it'll be like, I think Michelle is mad at me. And it'll feel really real. Mm-hmm. And then in the old days, that would never happen now because I have too much awareness, but I would let the brain kind of take me through like 2 weeks of being like, well, she probably doesn't want to hear from me. I shouldn't text her for a session or whatever. And sometimes it can be really extreme where the brain will be like, well, you should just die. You should just leave the planet, or you should leave Chase or whatever. And sometimes when I pull devil for that, it's like a huge relief because I'm like, oh, you're just full of shit and you're afraid because we're expanding. So yeah. So it's really like the liberation in the devil is that we get to see if we are like, let's play with the kind of old school definition. And let's just say that we're someone who identifies with being in recovery. And when we pull the devil, we're kind of dying to drink or use again, let's just say. So the way we would use the devil as an ally to us is to be able to sit with that desire and say, there is nothing wrong with that desire. There is nothing inherently wrong with desiring a drink. However, I am at choice and I can either say yes or no. And it is a moment in line three where we get to say, would it be in my highest and best today to have a drink, right now to have a drink? And if we feel a no, even though the brain might be blasting yes, we can sometimes feel that difference, even if we don't consider ourselves intuitives. Then with the devil, we make a choice. And either way is, I mean, there's no wrong in anything, but if we choose to say, yes, I am willing to stand here while my brain screams at me chemically to have this thing, and I'm going to choose not to today, and I'm going to choose access to support even, there is a kind of rewiring that takes place, and the chains that we're usually bound to with the devil are cut. Because it doesn't have anything to do with the drink. It has to do with what the devil card knows will keep us smaller. And usually that is, well, what's wrong with you that you would want to drink? It's usually shame and guilt and fear that we're invited into rather than the thing. And that's what I've found to be so powerful is like, as someone who's moved through a lot of addictive behavior, I have spent so much time being like, there's something defective, wrong with me, off in me. And so much of that has been loosened upon devil doing a lot of devil work and realizing it's actually not the thing. It's the ride I go on when I want the thing and I make it a problem. So when there can be a shift in that, those feelings and desires can come in and out, and we get to be discerning about where we're going to travel with them. And I would kind of land and end on the fact that just remembering that the devil is ruled by Capricorn, and Capricorn is arguably one of the hardest workers in the zodiac, and it's the mountain goat, and it will climb up the mountain. And part of the mastery of Capricorn is discerning what mountain to climb.
That's a good one.
Yeah, what's actually worth your time. So we're practicing in the devil, really, when you boil it down, discernment. There's a desire here. This feels like a big desire. Is that going to serve me, that desire, or is it going to bring me into old cycles of shame and guilt? And then we get to choose. And that is our birth into line three.
I always really love to hear like the second part of what you said about Capricorn and the discernment and what mountain to climb. I'm like, oh, that's great. And that does feel really applicable to everyone. But the first part felt like more about like your relationship to that card, what it means for you when you see it. And that feels really important too, as a reminder that we all have our own unique definitions in a way, and that those develop over time. So thank you for sharing yours. I know that my main relationship to that card definitely is around codependence, that and what has helped me understand the energy the best is that movie, The Labyrinth. Did you watch that growing up? I mean, that was such an incredible set of programs for women's empowerment, in my opinion. But the sense that, you know, Sarah, she's in the beginning, it doesn't want to deal with the realities of her, you know, parents changing marriage situation and growing up and being asked to take more responsibility in the family. And she wants to live in her fantasies, and she makes a wish from that place, that from this desire to just be insulated from harsh realities by like taking this fantasy journey. This is just, I just wish to like the goblins would come and take this responsibility from me right now. And so the way for me, the only way that I know to work with the devil comes from that movie. So I'm so grateful to Jim Henson, because it kind of says like the more you resist, the stronger he gets, the stronger the chains get, that like sometimes if you have a really powerful desire, like I just want the goblins to come and take this baby away, that like the only way to deal with that desire is to, like, actually to have it come to fruition, like to go into the journey of like what that underworld journey into this goblin realm and dance with the devil. And it's like during the dance with the devil that the illusions start to break down, and you know, the offering, just live in this illusion forever, that's what you wanted, is made. And she has the moment and is able to feel like, wait, no, it feels icky. This isn't what I thought it would be like. I think I need to just have my brother back and like deal with my life. And that way, what breaks the spell is just her saying, you have no power over me. That's like the whole world falls apart. So yeah, I think that I really struggled with that card before, because it would put me in more resistance and more in that, you know, oppressed place. And yeah, good old Jim Henson equipped me to use the magical tools to navigate this crazy universe.
Totally.
Yeah. So this is kind of like the flip side of that question, where we're like, you know, you're so good at unpacking that there's no like bad cards in the tarot, but at the same time, like you gotta have favorites, right? I mean, like,
I do.
So yeah. Like, what's like one of your favorite cards to see? Like when you see it, you just whole body fills with wonderful energy and you're like, okay, everything's gonna be fine.
I really love to see 10 of Cups and 6 of Pentacles.
Of Pentacles.
I do.
Really? Tell us why. That was a surprise to me.
Because 6 of Pentacles is, whenever I pull it, what I always hear from it is that I have an opportunity for greater relationship with exchange, that if I am giving and offering, that it is going to fill me up. But if I am needing to receive, to remind me that there is somebody with an overflow who's ready to give it to me. So whenever, and that really came from working with the Smith Rider Waite, actually, because it occurred to me upon looking at it that the two fellows who are poor are receiving money from this rich guy, they're filled up and his scales are balanced after having given the money. So everyone is made a little bit fuller through this exchange. It's become this really, in a very personal way, it's become just like this wonderful reminder to me to always be checking kind of my magical gas gauge and kind of where I am. And pentacles have nothing to do with money to me, so it only ever refers in my relationship with my cards to kind of where I am energetically, and kind of reminds me that there is a balance and a unity and a greater equilibrium if I want it. So I love that card.
That's wonderful. It's not one that I have much of a relationship to.
Yeah.
It's good to hear.
Yeah, it's nice
that there's lots of learning always to deepen into such a vast system. you know, I like astrology. My version of it is not that in depth. So it's just kind of like, okay, there's like, you know, 12 planets and like the season, the wheel of the year is like, there's four seasons,
totally.
You know, and then like the cards, it's like, okay, there's like 52 cards, or, you know, just, it's a lot to learn, but that also is exciting. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So I think I want to end with a quick one, which is just, you know, we're talking about the archetypal medicine and these different energies. So would love to hear a plant or animal or mineral ally that you feel like is really showing up for you right now.
Wild rose.
Mm.
All over the goddamn place. All over the place. The plant, the name, the phrase, everywhere. They have been, I finally was like, damn, like, yes, the door is open. Like the table is set for you. There's a place at the table for you and there will be. In so many different directions from other people too. Like the synchronicity has been very powerful. So wild rose.
Beautiful. Mm-hmm. I love it. It's very evocative.
Yeah.
So we're going to have to start wrapping up, but I would love to hear where our listeners can find out more about your upcoming offerings.
They can find out everything from two places. They can find out from my website, which is lindsaymack.com, and they can find out through my Instagram, which is @wildsoulhealing.
Wonderful. Mm-hmm. Just a formal thank you to you, Lindsay, and all of the angels, allies, ancestors of the light, and guides who have surely brought us together to have this divine conversation. And just a thank you to benevolent beings in all the realms, all the listeners. Amen. Blessed be Yaho. May it be finished in beauty. Jai Ma.
If you enjoyed this episode and would like us to make more, you can visit us at www.patreon.com/activeculturefamily, where you'll also find a 10% discount code that you can use to enroll in some really great online courses with Lindsay between now and March 1st of 2020. In addition, any funds collected through Patreon before May 1st of 2020 will go directly to our Women of Color Scholarship Fund for our Medicine Mandala Green Magic Apprenticeship, which is currently accepting applications and about 1/3 full for our group that begins in September of 2020. You can also check out episode 72 of the Tarot for the Wild Soul podcast, Embodying Queen of Pentacles, where Lindsay interviews us about our own healing journey, what inspired us to start our school, and more.
We're here.